times we all want to give up. Parenting just seems hopeless. We find ourselves crying out for something to keep us going. In this session, Scott and Joanne provide help for persevering and being consistent in your parenting. Being consistent has always been recognized as a necessity for good parenting, but it's easier said than done. You will not just hear how it's important, but you will also learn how to do it. Let's join Scott and Joanne.
Last week, we spent some time talking about character in our children and how to build character. And I had an opportunity this week to talk with David about character. Now, my boys really love baseball. They're both into baseball, and they really look forward to Little League season starting. And they're spending some time now talking about the team they're on and when practice is going to start. And they just really enjoy talking about that and anticipating the Little League season starting. Well, last Thursday, David's coach got the team together, his new team David's going to be on, for a strategy session. Now, if we're talking about 11-year-olds playing baseball, they have a preseason strategy session. This is serious baseball. So David was going off to this meeting at the library last Thursday night, and I think a tendency as a parent, as a mom at least, is to kind of say, oh, well, behave yourself, you know, do the right thing. You kind of think of all the things you want to tell them before they leave the house and make this impression on another person. But instead of just telling him to behave himself, I thought, well, this is an opportunity to talk about character. And so I asked David, I said, you know, you're going to be going and meeting this coach that you've never met before and teammates that you haven't met before. So what kind of impression do you want to leave with them after they meet you tonight? I said, they're not going to know any more about your baseball skills when the meeting is over. But when you come away from that meeting, what is that coach going to know about who David Miller is? And just talk a little bit about first impressions and how important that is and what kind of character he would be portraying in that situation. And then, of course, when he got home, I asked him, well, what was your first impression of your coach? You know, what do you know about your coach now that you didn't know before? What kind of person is your coach? And just to talk about character issues and what kind of person we want our children to be, I think it's helpful to talk to them about character issues in situations like that.
One lady scheduled a counseling appointment with us a couple weeks ago, and she came to the parenting class last time, and she called us this week and said, you know, I don't think I need to come to the counseling appointment. We developed this character development plan, and it's working. We're doing it. So I'm going to cancel our counseling. I think that's great. If we can equip parents to solve problems and work with their kids and run with things, that is a super testimony to what parents can do with their own children.
You know, as parents, we have to wear a lot of different hats as we interact with our children. We wear a nurse's hat when they're sick or they're hurt and we want to be compassionate with them. We wear a manager's hat, trying to keep the schedule running in the home and keeping everything organized. We wear a cook's hat, a playmate's hat, and a teacher's hat when we have to help them with their homework. And, you know, helping children with homework can be a real struggle for parents. School has changed a lot over the years, and I think the things that they're learning at school nowadays is different than when we were in school. And I have an illustration of how math has changed over the years. In 1960, this is a problem, how it might read in 1960. A logger sells a truckload of lumber for $100. His cost of production is 4/5 of this price. What is his profit? And the same problem rewritten for 1970 traditional math. A logger sells a truckload of lumber for $100. His cost of production is 4/5 of this price, or in other words, $80. What is his profit? Okay, now 1970, new math. A logger exchanges a set L of lumber for a set M of money. The cardinality of set M is 100, and each element is worth a dollar. Make a square array of 100 dots to represent the elements of set M. The set C is the cost of production, contains 20 fewer elements than set M. Represent set C as a subset of set M and answer the following question. What is the cardinality of set P, profits? Now we're moving on. 1980, that same problem might read. A logger sells a truckload of lumber for $100. His cost of production is $80 and his profit is $20. Your assignment is to underline the number 20. Now we come to the 1990s, we have outcome-based math. By cutting down beautiful forest trees, an environmentally ignorant logger makes a profit of $20. What do you think of that way of making a living? In your group, use role play to determine how the forest birds and squirrels feel.
It's hard to keep up with math of our children, certainly, as they're growing. we're going to talk to you about some of the different hats that are worn. In particular, we're talking about one that could be worn more often, we believe, in families, by parents. And that's the coach's hat. We're going to talk about how to be partners with your children, how to relate to them in a way that encourages working together. The goal of discipline is to teach. Now, certainly, we have to set limits, and setting limits is part of what we do as parents, but one of the things we want to do is to make discipline positive by teaching. So it is a positive focus. So we're looking for ways that we can coach, partner, counsel with them to move them in a positive direction as we are partnering with them.
As we discipline our children each day, we can set the stage for that kind of relationship with a child, a partnership relationship with them. So we're going to share with you three ways to discipline your children that can lead to this kind of partnering relationship with them.
Now, a coach relationship is a special relationship. It's different than a boss-servant relationship. Now, some parents have a boss-servant relationship with their children. That is, they order them around, and they own them, and they tell them what to do, and they expect them to do it, and they treat them in ways that aren't very honoring or respectful to the child. There's another kind of relationship we'll call a policeman relationship. That's the kind of relationship where parents set boundaries, and children can do whatever they want within those boundaries. If the child goes outside of those boundaries, the parent blows the whistle, get them back into line. Then there's the what we call the little prince relationship. It's the kind of relationship where parents are trying to make their child happy. Sometimes they're doing that because, well, they missed out as they were a child, and they don't want their child to miss out on some of the things that they could have, so they try to make their child happy. Or sometimes they just believe that if they just make their child happy, then their child will grow up to be mature and healthy.
Now, I suppose there are certain truths to each one of those relationships, but each one carries that truth too far. A better relationship with a child is that of a coach or a counselor, where we as a parent can come alongside the child and coach them in life, kind of give them some tips, but allow life to deliver the consequences, and we're just coaching them along, helping them to grow. Because our children are growing, and they're learning to maneuver in an adult world, and we can come alongside them, giving them some tips, some advice, helping them through that from kind of a coach perspective. Now, what kind of characteristics would make up an ideal coach? Let's just think about that for a minute. What is a coaching relationship like? Think of a coach that you might have had. What are some characteristics of a good coach relationship?
Compassion and empathetic.
Compassion and empathy. Good.
They have knowledge. They know what they're coaching about.
Sure. They have some knowledge that they want to pass on to that person.
Encouragement.
Good. Uh-huh. Yes. Didn't scream at you when you messed up. Just kind of allow for failure. That's a part of growing and learning, is that we make mistakes sometimes. That's good.
And speak the truth in a polite, helpful way instead of criticizing one.
Sure. Being positive, just teaching as opposed to criticizing. That's good. A coach has a relationship with that person they're coaching, the young person. The coach has a positive relationship. They believe in that young person. They want that person to succeed. And they communicate that through encouragement and teaching. The coach and the young person are on the same side, helping that young person to be successful in life.
You see, what we're trying to do is help children to learn from life, solve problems for themselves, take initiative, be independent. We're trying to work on some of those skills with children, and we do that by being a partner or a coach or a counselor with them. There's a delight in a parent's eyes when you see your child discover for themselves that they can do it. I remember when our children were, when Josh and Melissa were 3 and 4 years old, 3 and 4 years old, not at the same time, but as they were growing through that stage. You know, when those kids, they're always coming to you and asking for a drink. We decided we'd solve that problem and let them, we wanted to set them up so they could get a drink on their own. So we got a little pitcher with a lid, stuck it in the refrigerator. We stuck a plastic cup in the bottom drawer. We had them open the dishwasher as a table, you know, a dishwasher door, bring that down. They could use the table, put their cup in the center, bring their little pitcher out, pour it. And, you know, I remember Josh would be pouring in the middle of there, and he'd start to spill some over the edge, and he'd look up at me and as if, "Dad, you know, what are you going to do?" And sometimes I'd just ignore it, not say anything, just let him go on. Other times, I'd say something like, "Oops, looks like you spilled a little," without giving any more direction. And it was fun to watch him go over to the sink, get a washcloth, come over, clean up his little mess. And you know, the nice thing about dishwasher door is you just close it when you're done and it just cleans up the next wash, so it's not a problem. But in that way, we were able to allow him to solve problems for himself, to be able to deal with it on his own. And we've continued that with Josh over the years to try to get him to solve problems for himself. A few weeks ago, he came to me and said, "Dad, I'd like to paint my room." He's never painted a room before. You want to paint it green. I said, "No, you can't paint it green, but you can paint it." So we let him paint it white. He'll be here next time on April 15th, so you get to meet him if you haven't seen him yet. He wanted to paint it, so I said, "Okay." So I got him to paint, gave him some instruction. He'd seen me paint before, and so I told him how to do it. And I said, "You can just take the outlets. We'll take the covers off and just paint right over them because they've been painted over before. We'll just replace those outlets." So he gets all, he's painting, and I was out at the store, so I bought some more outlets and a switch. And as I was coming home, when I got home, I just took the bag, dropped it in his bedroom, and I was going to put them in later. Well, he comes to me the next day, and he says, "Hey, Dad, I think I'm going to install those outlets." And I said, "He's never worked electricity before." I said, "Okay, go ahead. Let me know if you need help." So he goes in, comes back 5 minutes later, and says, "Hey, Dad, should I turn off the power first?" Yeah, I'm glad you asked me that. That's really important here. The goal here with him, with Josh, is that we've tried to encourage him by letting him solve problems for himself as many times as possible, and he's developed a confidence for dealing with things like that on his own.
Now, not all situations that we as parents find ourselves in can be handled this way. We can't always just let our kids go off and try things on their own. Sometimes it's just not appropriate. Sometimes we have to be the bad guy and say, "No, you can't do that." Or we have to be the disciplinarian and give consequences in a certain situation. But sometimes we can come alongside the child and just allow them to experience life. And we're just giving some helpful input, some advice, coaching them along in that situation, and allowing them to experience some of life on their own. Now, how do you become a coach as a parent? What are some of the ways that we can do that? We're going to share with you some ideas tonight about how to become a coach, because often parents will get the idea, "Well, this seems like a good idea, but how do I do it?" And so we're going to share with you three strategies tonight for becoming a coach or a counselor with your child and having that kind of a partnering relationship.
The first one is to use open-ended questions with your children. Now, open-ended questions are questions that don't just end with yes or no, or God or Jesus. I mean, they end with something more elaborate than that, you know, so a child can think for themselves a little bit. Children like to bring problems to us. They often bring them to us in the form of complaining. We say that complaining is using an irritating voice to tell us a problem without talking about the solution. We're not interested in just hearing about the problem. We want to hear the solution. If you don't come and tell me I'm hungry, that's complaining. I don't care what voice you're using. Don't say, "I'm hungry." Come to me and say, "May I please have a snack?" Then you're coming to me with the solution, not just the problem. If you come to me and just are telling me about the problem, then that's complaining. And children like to bring their problems to us. And sometimes as parents, we just step in and solve them. "Oh, you're hungry? Okay, come on. Let me give you something to solve your problem." And I would suggest that it would be helpful for us sometimes to throw the problem back to our children with an open-ended question and say to them, "Oh, so you're hungry. What are you going to do about it? Or are you asking me for something?" And so we're throwing the problem back to them using some kind of an open-ended question to get them to think a little bit. If Paul is at the table, 6-year-old Paul, and we've all sat down to eat, and Paul looks down, he announces, "I don't have a fork." Now the temptation is for mom to just get up and go get one. I mean, she's the one who's at the table. So why not just say, "Oh," and keep eating? I mean, why solve Paul's problem for him? Why not just say, "Oh, you have a problem. What are you going to do about it?" That's an open-ended question that throws the problem back to Paul to tell Paul that the next move is here, is his.
You know, some parents feel like, "Well, I couldn't do that. That's not a loving thing to do, just to say, oh, you know, I can't respond that way." But what these parents don't realize is, allowing children to solve problems for themselves can be a very loving thing to do. If we can communicate to our children that we have a confidence in them, that they can solve this problem, we don't need to take it on, you can solve that problem, and then the child gets a self-esteem that says, "Hey, you know, I can handle this." So that's another alternative that parents have, is sometimes to love their children by allowing that child to solve the problem, and in that sense, grow in their self-esteem. So Paul may decide that he doesn't really need a fork, that he'll be content to use a spoon. And the parents could praise him for his flexibility. Or Paul could decide, well, he's going to get up and get a fork. And he goes to look in the drawer, and there's no forks there. And, you know, solving problems isn't always easy. But he may find a dirty one and wash it, or find one on the counter that hasn't been put away yet. Or he may be able to solve that problem. Sometimes as a parent, we may give some ideas what he might do, but allow Paul to solve that problem. And as parents, we're just giving some counsel along the way.
Part of the problem is if Paul wants to use his hands, then we might have to try something a little bit different. But the goal is to help them solve the problem for themselves in a creative and helpful way. Now, when allowing a child to solve problems for themselves, it's important to monitor the frustration level. A little frustration overcome by persistence builds determination. Too much frustration can cause discouragement. It takes a wise and sensitive parent to be able to encourage a child through a little bit of a frustrating experience to a solution. Unfortunately, many parents become drill sergeants. You've got a problem, I'll tell you how to solve it. You do that, come on, do this and this, and pretty soon the child gets the problem solved because the parent has taken over and solved it for them. Now, we're trying to suggest here is that one of the ways that we can help children solve problems for themselves, to become a little bit more independent, to learn from life, to develop confidence, is to become a partner or a coach. One way we can do that is by asking open-ended questions. Jesus did that. In the Gospels, he said to the woman at the well, "Where's your husband?" To Peter and the disciples, he said, "Who do people say that I am? And who do you say that I am?" Jesus was a master at asking questions, and a number of the things that we apply to parenting come from our study of the Scriptures. We spent some time just looking at the Gospels, finding every time that Jesus interacted with anybody, what did he do? How did he handle it? How did he respond to people? How did he treat them? We learned a whole bunch of stuff that we can then apply because, see, Jesus was discipling, disciplining people around him. We're doing the same thing with our children. We want to disciple our children as we discipline them through the process. One of the ways we can do that is by asking these open-ended questions.
So we're going to share with you now some hints for using open-ended questions, some things to remember as you try and incorporate this into your parenting, into your disciplining of your children. The first hint is to develop a repertoire of open-ended questions, some questions that you can use in situations where your children are bringing you a problem. You might say, "What seems to be the matter?" or "What are you going to do about it?" "What's happening?" As children respond with, "I don't know," you'll be quick then, you know, you'll want to jump in and lecture them and answer the question for them. But as parents, what we could do is just step back and let the child think about that for a little while, to explore it a little bit and try and decide what's going on, what's really the problem here. If a parent sees Billy withdrawing from his friends, that parent might say, "Hey, Billy, it looks like you're having a problem. Why don't you come and tell me about it?" Just asking an open-ended question, getting Billy to think about what's going on and to talk about it. Now, sometimes children bring their problems to us as parents. Other times, children will just live with the frustration of having that problem unsolved. They'll feel bad, but they won't do anything about it. So we may want to step in and ask a question just to get that child thinking about, well, what's going on here? What might I be able to do to solve this problem I'm experiencing? What we want to do is help children to move through the problem-solving process, help them understand how to think about a problem and how to work toward a solution. If you see a child struggling with another friend, you may say, "Hey, let's talk about this. What's going on here?" And just ask an open-ended question to get the child talking. If Bobby can't find his boots, you may just ask, "Well, where did you have them?" Or, "Where did you see them last? When did you last have them?" Just ask some questions instead of going to find those boots for him. Try and get Bobby to solve that problem. If Kelly comes to you and says, "I'm bored," well, what kind of things do you like to do? Get the child thinking again, rather than you just jumping in and solving that problem. The goal is to get children thinking about what some possible solutions might be and what they can do about the problem. If your child comes home from school, has some math homework, but left the math book at school, you could say, "Hey, you got a problem there. What are you going to do about it?" Help the child to take on that, you know, not that you would right away jump in and solve the problem, but allow that child to think about the problem and what might be a solution. And you can just help that by asking some open-ended questions.
A second hint here to make this work in your family is to express empathy. You don't want to be hard with your children. If you don't involve this hint, then your children are liable to respond poorly to the process because they'll view this is view as condescending, and they'll respond with anger in the process. So it's important to respond with some kind of empathy to them. Empathy essentially says to them, I care about you, but I'm still leaving you with the responsibility. Now, empathy is different than over-identifying with the child and taking their problem on and saying, oh, I feel so bad that you have this problem. Let me take it for you and solving it for them. Rather, you're expressing empathy to them. Some suggestions of words to use might be, I bet that feels terrible. Or I understand why you're discouraged. I'd feel bad if that happened to me. Your frustration makes sense. It's an essential ingredient for partnership. When you're partnering with someone, the empathy is what helps the relationship dynamic with your children. It's important to say things like, that makes sense. I'd be frustrated too if I couldn't put that toy together. Empathy is an essential ingredient for developing a partner relationship with your children.
The third hint for using open-ended questions is to get permission to share alternatives. Sometimes we want to jump in and tell the child, you know, this is what you can do about your problem. But that child may not be ready to hear it. Now, they may not know what to do, and so they might need those alternatives, but they may not be ready for that yet. Now, sometimes people will share a problem with another person because they want sympathy. They're not ready for the solution yet. They just want sympathy. And, you know, maybe they just want to share that problem. As counselors, we often have to discern, is a person sharing this problem with us because they want a solution, or do they just want sympathy? Do they just want to share that problem with someone? If you're sharing solutions with someone and they start, well, that's not going to work. No, I can't do that. You know, that person may not be looking for some solutions. They may be looking just for some sympathy. That's okay. Sometimes that's what our children need. You know, the boys come to me with a problem. What they might need is to curl up in my lap and be cared for a little while before they have what it takes to go out and solve the problem. So wanting sympathy is okay, but we need to discern that as parents. What is it that the child needs? Are they looking for some solutions to this problem, some ideas of what they can do? Or are they just looking to be cared for at that point? So you might want to ask a question. Are you ready to hear some possible solutions? Would you like to know what some other children might do with that particular problem? Would you like an idea of what you could do? Ask permission before you start sharing alternatives.
Sometimes I come home to my wife and she shares a problem with me. I can get into big trouble if I start problem solving and she wants sympathy. Okay, sometimes all she wants is sympathy from me, and that's okay. And that's a very valid way for us to care for our children as well. That we need to be able to respond to them based on their needs. And so there are times when we'll care for them, but there are other times when we offer the solution. So we'll ask them permission to share alternatives. Another hint is to offer them several alternatives. Share them with them. Depending on their responsiveness to you at the time, you might want to share a few lousy ideas first so they can reject a couple before you come to some choice nice ones that you've thought about. But you're sharing several alternatives. You might say, would you like to hear what other children have done in that situation? And so, here, I'll give you some ideas about how you can solve that problem. And then offer several of them. And then try to anticipate the consequences. What might happen if you do blank? Or what will happen if you do this in this situation? So what you're doing is helping to anticipate the consequences so the child can be discerning, can recognize what might happen as a result of the actions that they might take.
Now, after you've shared a few solutions, allow the child to think about that. You might want to say to the child, well, which one of these solutions seems best to you? Now, the child may not be ready to make a choice. They may not like any of the solutions. They may not like what you've shared. They may not be able to come up with their own. They just need some time to think about it. But just allow the child to have that time rather than jumping in and solving the problem. You know, all the solutions may look bleak. The different alternatives may not look very attractive to the child at first. But once the child realizes that you're not solving the problem for them, then they may be more willing to choose one of those possible solutions and be willing to step in. Again, children may resort to complaining. They may just rather complain about the problem than solve it. And we need to realize as parents that that's unacceptable. Just focusing on the negatives, focusing on what the problem is without looking for a solution is not helpful for anyone. So we want to encourage our children away from that complaining and encourage them, well, which one of these choices are you going to choose? You need to do something about this problem and allow the child then to choose which alternative they're going to work with.
So one of the suggestions we're making here about partnering with your children is to use open-ended questions, because that'll help you to be a counselor or a coach to your child and help them work through a problem-solving process.
Now, a second way to be a counselor or a coach to our children is to use natural consequences. Natural consequences are a way where children learn from life. The consequence is already out there. It's going to happen. And we as parents can just step back and allow that. As parents, we say that sometimes we can do more by doing less, actually accomplish more by doing less. We want to stay out of the way and just allow the natural course of events to take place, and then the child learns from natural consequences. They're learning from life. Life is delivering the consequence, and we're standing beside that child as a counselor or a coach.
What we're trying to do here is help our children to learn from life. If life becomes the teacher for our children, we take on a different role. We become counselors and coaches with them. We can partner with them. We can share empathy. We can work through the particular situation with them. Too often, as parents, we want to spare our children frustration in life and often rob them of valuable experiences that would be where they'd be able to learn and grow. When we step in unnecessarily, we're actually robbing our child of a potential learning experience sometimes. And so as parents, we want to be sensitive to the situations. How many of you have watched a three-year-old trying to tie a shoe? It is painful to watch that child. You know, they're sitting there tying that shoe. You feel like, just give me the shoe, you know, and I'll tie it for you. You feel like, I just can't watch this. I'm going to have to go away while you do this. It's painful sometimes to watch our children in those frustrating situations. But if we can coach them and help them through, then we've taught them a valuable thing. The four-year-old who goes out to play on a hot day wearing a turtleneck will learn that that's not something they want to do. The six-year-old who chooses to skip snack because she wants to continue her game may feel the pain later on. The 10-year-old who spends all her money on one thing and doesn't have any later when she wants to spend it learns from experience that saving is a valuable thing. These are tempting opportunities for parents to condemn or lecture or point out weaknesses. When you identify the situations in life that are natural consequence opportunities, those are excellent opportunities to come alongside of our child, help them learn from experience, help them understand what's going on, and be their counselor or coach.
And we're going to share with you a few hints for using natural consequences as you work with your children. Hint number one is to talk less. To de-emphasize any instruction or warning that you'd be tempted to give. I think as parents, we like to lecture our children. We like to tell them exactly the way it is. You know, you're going to be too hot if you wear that turtleneck outside. And we try and talk them out of wearing the turtleneck. Whereas if we would just talk less, allow them to experience that for themselves, they will learn. I think sometimes we just need to talk less as parents and allow our children to do what they're doing and experience the natural consequence and learn from life. As parents, we can model wise behavior. We may say to our daughter, hey, it's going to be cool later. I think I'll take a sweater. Just modeling that and making the observation and allowing our child to draw their own conclusion. I'm going to eat a snack now because dinner won't be for a few hours. Just modeling wise behavior can be helpful.
As with open-ended questions, another hint that makes this successful is to be empathetic. We're trying to feel with the child, and we learn things the hard way. We learn things through experience, and they're painful sometimes, and it's helpful if someone comes along and says, boy, I understand how you're feeling. Instead of saying, yeah, you get a scene that was coming, or I told you so. When children learn from experience, if we can be empathetic with them, it's helpful to be able to say to them, boy, I'd be disappointed if my markers got dried out like that too. Those caps are important, aren't they? Now, if you came in the room and you saw the caps off the markers drying out, you'd take some action. But usually natural consequences have already taken effect and there's nothing you could have done about it. And so the situation comes to you and they've got their container of markers and some of them are dried out and they're disappointed. And so you can empathize with them about those dried up markers. You might say, oh, ouch, you stubbed your toe. Boy, I bet that hurt. Or a child who's carrying an armload of books, too many books, may drop one and say, hey, are you okay? Instead of saying, it's too many books, shouldn't do that. We're approaching them by loving them and being empathetic and letting them, allowing them to learn from life. When Peter forgets his water bottle for soccer practice, oh, man, I bet you're thirsty, aren't you? Those are ways that we can identify with the feelings that a child has, but the responsibility is still theirs. It's their problem. It's not my problem that he forgot his water bottle. It's still the child's problem that he forgot the water bottle, and I'm just coming alongside to help.
Hint number three is to avoid rescuing or condemning. Avoid saying, I told you so. Now, so often, you know, we see the mistake that our child is making. We want to say, hey, you know, didn't you see that was coming? Didn't you know it? We jump in and we try and lecture the child, and it just really takes the focus off the lesson they could be learning, because here we are telling them, I told you so, and helping them to feel guilty or condemned. Whereas if we would just step back and allow them to experience that consequence themselves, and we were to encourage them, they could learn more from that experience. Another mistake that parents often make is to rescue their children, to jump in too quickly to stop the process and help that consequence not come, to rescue our children from that. And sometimes rescuing our children is an appropriate way to show love to our children. That can be a very loving thing to do. But sometimes just stepping back and allowing the child to learn from the experience is also a loving thing to do. Sometimes it's appropriate just to let that consequence come and be with next to our child, kind of partnering with them, say, hey, you know, yeah, that is too bad, rather than removing the consequence itself. Now, you might want to give a warning if a consequence is coming. Or if you don't do your homework now, you may not get it done in time. Just warning of the consequence that's going to happen, but then step back and allow the child to make the choice. What are they going to do? And then the child experiences the consequence of whatever they decide. If a young child goes outside without his mittens on, his hands get cold. Well, he's going to experience that consequence himself. He's going to realize, oh, I guess next time I'll take my mittens. The child who plays too rough with a cat may get scratched. The teenager who goes to bed too late, he can't get up the next morning for the paper out. These are opportunities for children to learn from experience by natural consequences.
Another hint is to recognize that an explanation or a debriefing might be helpful. After the consequences happened, you want to be sensitive and ask yourself, is this a teachable moment? Don't assume that just because you have the need to lecture that they have the need to learn. It doesn't always happen that way. Some parents view themselves as an inspector. They go around with their clipboard, hat turned around backwards, you know, and they're pointing out all of the things they see wrong with their child continually. Here's the things you're not doing right. Oh, you made another mistake. And so continually they're going around like inspectors being critical of their child. Now, what we're suggesting is that is an unhelpful way to help children learn from life. And rather, if we can come alongside them and become a counselor or coach with our child, we can teach them much more. With natural consequences, parents learn that they don't have to speak in order for a child to learn.
Natural consequences can often be a good way for children to learn a certain lesson. But we need to guard against a few things, and natural consequences should be discontinued if some damage is happening. Maybe the child is going to be hurt, or some property is going to be damaged, or if the child is becoming frustrated. Those are situations where we want to discontinue the natural consequence because it is no longer productive or appropriate in that situation. If a young child is trying to stand on a ball, you might let them experience a natural consequence of not being able to get up on that ball. But if an 8-year-old is trying to stand on the bicycle seat of a moving bike, you're going to step in and say, wait a minute, this isn't a good idea. That child, you don't want to learn from natural consequences because they could really get injured in that situation. So you want to be careful when you're using natural consequences to guard against these things. If property might be damaged, the child might get hurt, another child might get hurt, or if the child is becoming very frustrated.
Furthermore, if the child isn't learning from the natural consequence, you're going to have to change to something else. So we allow the natural consequence to take its effect, but if the child continually is not responding or learning from that natural consequence, they need another alternative. Some parents think that if they allow George to live in a messy room, he'll eventually like it clean. Well, unfortunately, that doesn't work with most children. And so that may not be an appropriate time to use a natural consequence. Hoping that a child will become neat by living in a messy room may not work, and it doesn't work for most children. So there are times when we don't allow natural consequences to take effect, or we'll step in and change and use something else.
So we're going to share with you, as I said, three ways to be a coach or counselor to your children. The first one is to use open-ended questions. The second tool to use would be natural consequences, but sometimes, as we've said, natural consequences aren't appropriate. So the third strategy would be to use logical consequences. Now, logical consequences are a simulated natural consequence, in a sense. If the natural consequence is inappropriate, as a parent, we might create a logical consequence that simulates the real world, but either speeds up the process or protects from damage of property or protects someone from being hurt. So we want to create a logical consequence in that situation.
Whereas natural consequences often require that the parent get out of the way, logical consequences require that the parent do some pre-planning, require some thoughtfulness. When you're trying to figure out a logical consequence, the first thing you want to ask yourself is, what would the natural consequence be if you leave a bike out in the rain? What's the natural consequence of leaving a bike out in the rain? it gets rusty. But see, that process is going to take 5 years for that bike to become inoperable. Okay, I don't want to wait around for my child to learn on a 5-year plan not to leave his bike out in the rain. And so I'm going to shorten that 5 years down to 3 days because he's not going to be able to ride it for the next 3 days. What I've done is, you see, the natural consequences, his bike would rust. It would become inoperable. He would not have a bike. He would not be able to ride it. I'm going to take that natural consequence, squeeze it down into 3 days and say, okay, because you left your bike out in the rain, we've talked about this, I'm not going to allow you to ride it for the next few days. The consequence is related logically to the offense.
6-year-old Tommy is fighting with a neighborhood friend. The natural consequence is that another child may get hurt or he may lose his friend. So the logical consequence, you may tell Tommy, is if you can't play nicely with your friend, you'll not be able to play with him this afternoon. You're going to have to play by yourself. So the natural consequence is he'd lose that friendship. The logical consequence would be he'd just lose that friend for the afternoon. So what we're doing is trying to simulate the real world here to help children learn that lesson a little bit more quickly. Logical consequences relate somehow to the offense. And they teach the child that their choices have effects. There's a cause and effect in life. And so the logical consequence is created to teach that to the child, that something negative is going to happen if you continue on this present course of action. You need to play more gently with that stuffed animal, or I'm going to take it away. Now, if the child plays real rough with the stuffed animal, starts swinging it around, you know, eventually it's going to rip and come apart and the child will lose it. So we'll say, we'll take it away, because that simulates what would naturally happen over time and allows the child to learn that lesson more quickly. Now, if we're going to use logical consequences with a child, we want to be calm and matter-of-fact about it. We don't want to come on real hard with them. But hey, you know, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. And that's the way we deliver the logical consequence. It's the natural course of action, in a sense, what's going to happen in life if you continue on this course of behavior.
When you work with natural and logical consequences, they're both ways that you can help children learn from life. But they require some thinking. What, for example, is the natural consequence of speeding down the road in your car? What? You get in an accident. What's the logical consequence of speeding? You get a ticket. Aren't you glad you get the ticket instead of the, well, I don't know. I mean, both of them are pretty bad nowadays. So, but those are consequences that motivate us to not speed down the road in our car. If Susie's playing with her money in the store and she may lose it. That's the natural consequence. And I may allow her to lose it as a natural consequence. But I may decide that I'm not going to do that. I'm going to use a logical consequence instead and take it away from her. She loses the privilege of having money because she's not able to manage or care for it. A child who's lazy. The natural consequence of being lazy is that it's hard to get a job. You can't. Nobody wants to have you as an employee. And so I might give that child more work to do as a logical consequence in order to build up their tolerance for work and their ability to work hard. A child who leaves a baseball bat out in the rain or outside is liable to have it stolen. That's the natural consequence. Rather than allow that to happen, I may take the bat away for a few days as a logical consequence.
Logical consequences are illustrated in scriptures in a number of different contexts. In Matthew 18, the master who chose to forgive the debt then decided to reinstate it because the debtor was unforgiving. The consequence logically related to the offense. In church discipline, we talk about separation or excommunication, which is a picture of what happens in our relationship with the Lord when we sin. So logical consequence is a picture of what actually happens with natural consequences. By using open-ended questions, natural consequences, and logical consequences, parents allow the child to learn from life. Life is delivering the consequence, and we're standing beside that child, partnering with them. We're not the one coming and giving the consequence, but life is giving the consequence. Now, using these techniques or these strategies may take some extra work on the parent. It might take some pre-planning, thinking about, well, what's the logical consequence here? It may take some extra self-discipline to not lecture, but to be quiet and allow the child to learn from the situation. But as we work with these strategies with our children, they'll begin to learn their lessons from life, which is a mature way for them to be learning and to growing, to realize how the world actually works and to learn lessons in that way.
We don't believe this is the only way to parent. There are many times when you have to use other consequences, or you need to step in and discipline a child, or set limits, or a host of other things that you need to do. But we are all trying to help our children to grow up to be responsible, wise adults. One of the effective ways to do that is to wear a coach's hat, to step in and come alongside them and teach them about the real world, teach them how life operates. We don't have to wait till they're 18 to do that. We can start that when they're 2, 3, or 4 years old and help them to start learning from life, to develop a confidence about how to solve problems for themselves, how to learn from the situations that they find themselves in. When Josh was a little younger, I coached Little League for several years. During that time, Josh and I would examine some of the other coaches and see their different styles. And we talked a lot about some of the ideals that the other teams had, or winning was so important, or the coaches were very hard on their kids, and we enjoyed just having fun on our team. We were playing one game in the playoffs, and it was a particularly vicious game. The other coach was yelling at the umpires, yelling at me, yelling at his players, and it was a very difficult game. We lost the game. But Josh and I talked about the frustrating moments of that game, and I won in the relationship department with Josh. Josh knew that I didn't want to be like that other coach, that I wasn't going to parent him or coach a team like that other coach was coaching his team. He won, but see, I won in the relationship department with Josh. The irony of that story is that that coach eventually became the head of the league in Lawrenceville. And this last year was Josh's last season because he graduated out of the age group. Every year they give one award out. Of the 500 students who play baseball, they give an award out to one student who demonstrates sportsmanship and encouragement to the other teams. And that coach, that head coach, gave my son Josh that award. And it was ironic because Josh knew, you know, the most important things in life are not winning. Josh was on a losing team last year. But he won an award that talked more about character than talked about winning. And that was important for him. We learned about coaching together. And together, Josh and I have developed a relationship, a coaching relationship, where he can go out and try new things. He can have confidence. He can develop that ability to attack life and be wise about that.
Partnering with your children can be a great experience for you as a parent and also for your child. And your child will learn to appreciate the wisdom that you have and the advice that you can give as you come alongside them as a partner and not always just as a disciplinarian. And this is a relationship that you can start with your children when they're young. You know, the 5-year-old who's roughly playing with a paper bag, or the 9-year-old who's trying to pour milk into a thermos, the 12-year-old who loans her favorite tape out to a friend, or the 16-year-old who is continually late for work. These are all situations where children can learn from life. Life will deliver the consequence if the child is just let to continue on their present course of action. The question is, what is your role going to be as the parent? Are you going to lecture the child? Are you going to criticize and condemn the child for the choice that he or she is making? Or are you going to rescue that child from the consequences and step in and short-circuit the process? Or are you going to stand beside your child and offer some caring counsel, some empathy, some words of advice, but just allow the child to be acting in that situation, solving the problem and receiving the consequence of the choice they make? As parents, we want to be able to stand beside our children and just offer that caring counsel when appropriate, realizing that our children are growing and learning, and sometimes they're going to make mistakes, and that's okay. We can allow them to make those mistakes and realize that it's a growing process for them. I think the sooner that our children learn to learn their lessons from life, the better off they'll be, because life has a lot of lessons to teach, and as adults, we're still learning lessons from life. And if our children can learn to learn their lessons from life also, I think that they'll be growing in wisdom and maturity even when they're young. The secret to teaching children to learn from life is to become their counselor or coach, to come alongside them as a partner and partner with them through life.
This is the end of this tape. We hope this session has been a valuable one for you. Maybe it would be helpful for you to stop right now and write something down you intend to do differently this week before going on to listen to the next tape. Each tape will provide new helpful insights to work on in your family before you move on. If you would like more information about effective parenting, please call us at area code 609-771-8002 or 1-800-771-8334. We're here to help you.